Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Today's business travelers are finding that fitting in a little leisure time keeps them recharged and excited on work trips. I know this because whenever I travel for work, I always try and meet up with a friend to catch up, have a great dinner, or hit a museum wherever I am. So if you're traveling for work, go with the card that puts the travel in business travel, the Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know. Audible is the home of storytelling, and it lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love or something new to discover. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. In fact, I've been really into thrillers and true crime lately, and I just got back from a long car trip where I was listening to the latest zombie Fallout book, Bridging the Gap. And I swear, I had to keep checking the back seat for any glowing eyes as I drove home on that deserted highway. In fact, on so many of my journeys, Audible is there for me with comedy, bestsellers, history, exclusive originals, and more. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/built or text built to 500-500. That's audible.com/built or text built to 500-500. We've all been there. Maybe we used one or two misleading words in a shared document, and then the whole team spends a lot of wasted time trying to get on the same page. But we don't need to make those mistakes. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all of the wasted time and money that goes with it. I spend a lot of time writing. I write scripts, emails, speeches, proposals, you name it. And Grammarly helps me find the right tone. It does so much more than correct grammar. It's almost like a trusted writing partner. And when every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, everything gets better. Teams that communicate better with Grammarly report 52% less time spent writing sales emails and 66% less time spent editing marketing content. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Hey, everyone. So I've got kind of a random question for you. What do you get when you take two psychologists, one social worker, and a few pounds of day-old pita bread? The answer, of course, is Stacy's Pita Chips, one of the businesses we featured at our How I Built This Summit last fall. Now, if you remember Stacy's story from the podcast, she was a social worker who teamed up with her brother David and her then-husband Mark, both of whom were psychologists. In other words, they knew nothing about the food industry when they built a multi-million dollar snack company. And the whole thing began almost by accident. When Stacy and Mark ran a sandwich cart on the streets of Boston, they would take leftover pita, cut it up, and bake it into these crunchy little triangles, which at first they gave away for free, until it became clear that people were willing to pay for them. Anyway, when Stacy and I sat down live on stage in San Francisco, I asked her what was going through her head at the time.
Do you remember thinking, even once you kind of moved into making pita chips, that this would grow into a massive brand?
No idea.
And no intention?
Absolutely none. Never started the company with an exit strategy. Didn't know what an exit strategy was when we started. Didn't know what a business plan was.
What do you think it was that fueled the growth? I mean, was it something that you were doing, or do you think in some ways the growth found you? Because it was sort of a wave, right, that you started to ride. Bread and Circus in Boston, which now is Whole Foods, and there was more interest in sort of simpler and wholesome natural foods.
It started as a wave, and then it kind of went to a hockey stick.
Yeah.
So, you know, we learned the value of being able to control your growth, which is a skill in itself, you know, because we were doing our own manufacturing. And with the growth, we got into gourmet food stores, and people were paying about $6 a bag. Has anybody here ever had the pita chips?
Yeah. Has anybody had the pita chips? Are you kidding me?
Well, you know what? I used to ask that when I would go speak somewhere. There'd be like five hands in the audience, and I'd start explaining, well, a pita chip, we take some bread, and we season it, we cut it. anyway, I'm glad I don't have to go that far anymore. But we started in gourmet food stores. From there, we were in natural food stores, and we always just had pure ingredients. Mm. We didn't, you know, the whole natural food boom, and we were just automatically natural. I mean, there was really nothing in it. There were like three or four ingredients. So we didn't actually have to do anything when all these other companies were trying to make themselves natural. And we were like, hey, we already are.
Mm. There was a point pretty early on, because at the beginning, Mark was cutting the pita into chips by hand.
I told you, he had a really big right bicep.
Right bicep, right. Yes. Yeah, and eventually to kind of grow it, it wasn't like you went out to a bunch of private equity companies. You didn't really raise money, right? You were just kind of funding the business through the sale of pita chips.
Through the sale of pita chips and running up our credit cards. You know, beg, steal, borrow, driving a crappy car, whatever it is you had to do.
I mean, how did you do that? I was talking to some attendees earlier, and they were same story. You know, how do I grow this thing? I'm also worried that, you know, when I put my product out in the world, a bigger company will see it and just replicate it and crush me. That could have happened so easily. Pita chips are pretty easy to replicate. You can't patent them, right?
You can't patent them, and they're not that easy.
I'm sorry. But, I mean, you can imagine that a Frito-Lay or one of these, like, you know, huge company could figure out, you know, some kind of competitive product, right? And you didn't have a whole lot of money. So how are you doing that? How are you investing in equipment? How did you even have a place to make them? Was the rent cheap? I think you were in, like, Lynn, Massachusetts or something like that?
Yeah, in Randolph, Mass. And the factory's still there. But initially we started off borrowing some space from a woman who made pretzels.
Right.
And it was when we started having to install some of our own equipment that we had to then find a bigger space. So we found a space in a construction-type building, super nice landlords, and he sectioned off, you know, 5,000 square feet, and then we were growing bigger, and he was on the other side, and he's like, well, I can just move the wall over, and he moved the wall over.
Yeah.
We took 10,000 square feet, and then he's like, well, I can just move out, and then we took 20,000 square feet, and then when we started growing even further, that's when we looked. Literally, one driveway over was this mattress factory for sale.
And you took a loan, right? A bank loan for that.
Yes, we had a bank loan for that. And I said, well, can I get $500,000 because we have to move? And they initially said,
no,
not without equity. And then I went out and I got accounts and got letters from airlines and things like that. And
airlines, you said, we're going to hand out Stacy's pita
bags,
chips. Yeah.
Yeah, if you can make them. I'm like, will you write that down?
Yeah. And that's how you were able to secure the loans.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, now, of course, you know, the lure is to go out and seek capital and to raise money. And at that time, was that even something you and Mark considered doing?
We did. We considered raising capital. It takes a lot of time and effort, and I don't have a business background, and well, none of us did.
And you were a social worker. That was your
background. I was a social worker. They were psychologists. Anytime I have to do math, I go to my sister because she's got an MBA. And I'm like, you know. So we were just about to take on financing, which is when we landed the Trader Joe's account. And so we started doing higher volume. And they such a nice company. They would pay before they even got the product.
Yeah. Yeah, Trader Joe's unusual that way.
Yeah, they pay really quickly. And so I ended up, all of a sudden, we were getting money in, and we were kind of using, and the chips were really selling, so we used the money that we got in from Trader Joe's to really fund the business and help us grow, so we never ended up taking on any extra outside money.
Yeah, which was a very fortunate decision.
Mm-hmm.
Remember on the podcast, you said something to me that really resonated. You said, by the mid-2000s, you had your daughters, and you said the business really started to run you. I have talked to so many people who've been on the show that say, if you think you're going to run this business, understand the business is going to run you. I think Angie and Dan Bastian of Boom Chicka Pop also said a version of that. What was that period like? I mean, that was when you, I guess, started to think about, maybe I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. I think at the time I still would have done it. But I think Mark was, like, there was all these things that he didn't get to do that he wanted to do. he wanted to go off and he wanted to travel and he wanted to do all these things, and yet we're still growing really quickly. And we had been approached by five of the largest food conglomerates that there are in the world, asking us to sell. And it was a lot. It was, you know, I'm breastfeeding in the closet. I got the, and yeah. It was, and so the business was really started to dictate our lives versus us doing what we love to do and making a living at it. And so that's when we decided, well, I think maybe we should think about selling.
You know, I'm really interested in this idea of passion, right? We're told, we often hear follow your passion, which is not actually possible for many people. You know, follow your passion. Well, your passion may not be able to afford you a sustainable life. Were pita chips, was that a passion? I mean, were you and Mark really following that passion, or did it become a passion once you started to really pursue it?
It wasn't the pita chips per se. It was just like we were in the food business where we both wanted to be. But I feel like it becomes more of a passion when other people start to believe in you. When it transitions from, you know, this crazy idea, and you guys have graduate degrees and you've got loans, and when all of a sudden, when it starts selling and other people start believing in you, and then you start to develop your team and other people start like wanting to work for you and quitting their jobs, and then you're responsible for them making a living, and that all is like there, then it really becomes a, you know, passion.
You know, I'm interested in you have a new company that you started. You obviously sold Stacy's. You're not involved with the company formally anymore. You've got this new company called Bebold Energy Bars. You've got a juice bar in Needham, Massachusetts, near to where you live. This is a startup all over again. Obviously, the stakes are different because you are financially secure. It's not a make or break. But of course, you want it to work and you want it to be successful. Do you have some of that same kind of anxiety and energy you did when you were starting Stacy's now with Bebold? Is there some overlap in that feeling?
Yes. You know, I'm at my juice bar and I'm selling all of these bars, you know, the handmade in the back with the mixer. Once again, you know, I didn't start anything big. We got a mixer going in the back and you know, we mix, press, and package. And I have to say it's no less nerve-wracking starting another company, especially now, like now people expect something from us.
The pressure's on.
Yeah, the pressure's on. And when we reached out to some of the people that worked with us at the pita chip company and said, you know, do you want to become a part of the team? And we started to get people. Now our COO, she was with Quaker and then with Jim Beam. And now we called her up and we said, well, we're starting this company. And said, think about it, take a week. She talked to your husband. 2 days later, she called us back and she said, I'm in.
Wow.
And when she, I mean, like, that's a real job. Like, I keep thinking a real job. And she's quitting her real job to come with us and, you know, and do this.
And you're nervous about that.
Nervous about it. And not only that, but it's like, hey, you know what? It gave us this other sense, this additional sense of confidence and belief that, you know, we can do this and we can do this again. And even when my brother came on board and he's just sitting in the juice bar watching these people buying these bars and buying these bars, he's my number one believer.
So Bebold, how big do you want it to be? Do you want it to be...
I'm doing what I love to do now again.
Yeah.
So again, there is no exit strategy.
Yeah.
We just want to have a, you know, it's a refrigerated bar, and I almost felt remiss just selling it in my local juice bar and having so many people love it and then not putting it out on the market, because everybody is going to love it.
They are called Bebold Bars. This is Stacy Madison. She is the founder of Stacy's Pita Chips. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it so much. It's been great having you.
Thank you so much. Do I get that walk-off music?
Yeah, you get it. And a round of applause. Another round of applause. Thank you. That's Stacy Madison. She's the co-founder of Stacy's Pita Chips and founder of Bebold Energy Bars. Stacy joined me live on stage at the How I Built This Summit, which happened in October at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. We've got one more of my conversations from the summit left, and it will be in your feed in just a few weeks, so keep checking for updates. Thanks to J.C. Howard, who produced this episode, and Ramtin Arablouei, who wrote the music. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to How I Built This. We'll be right back.
This is NPR.
I listen to Bullseye because Jesse always has really good questions.
What did John Malkovich wear when he was 20?
I don't know how to describe it.
Bullseye, interviews with creators you love and creators you need to know. From MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Today's business travelers are finding that fitting in a little leisure time keeps them recharged and excited on work trips. I know this because whenever I travel for work, I always try and meet up with a friend to catch up, have a great dinner, or hit a museum wherever I am. So if you're traveling for work, go with the card that puts the travel in business travel, the Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know.
50 high school senior girls descend on Mobile, Alabama every summer to compete for a massive cash prize. It isn't Survivor. It's one of America's most lucrative scholarship competitions for teen girls. It's been around for 7 decades. Now you'll hear what took place behind the scenes. From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. I'm your host, Shimo Liai, and I was Nevada's contestant 20 years ago. Now I'm returning as a judge to find out what 2 weeks with 50 of the country's most ambitious teens can tell us about girlhood in America. What happens when the competitors are thrown into the deep end with the best and brightest? And how does surviving the competition prepare them for everything that comes after? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.